Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Morning Drive, Monday edition. Titans lose 24-21 to the Texans yesterday at Nissan Stadium. Joe Rexrode, Braden Gall here on Morning Drive. Joe filling in for Derek Mason, who's recovering from shoulder surgery, and he'll be back. He's day-to-day, so we'll find out just exactly when he'll be back, and we'll let you guys know. And he'll be back on running his yap soon enough and singing Whitney Houston and having a good old time. So Marquise Munson producing. Tweet at us at 1025 underscore MD. At 1025 underscore MD. Of course, the text line is open as well. But if you tweet at us on that Twitter account there, your worst holiday office Christmas party experience, we've got a few already that we can read that are pretty funny. And we'll give away a $100 gift card in the final hour of the show each day this week, just like we did last week as well. Preds lose 4-1 to the Dallas Stars now. 12th place in the Western Conference. We talked about the Vols losing at home to the Memphis Tigers, as well as Joe Burrow winning an emotional Heisman Trophy, which was a really cool ceremony on Saturday evening. One of the better Heisman Trophy speeches that we've ever seen. However, the Titans lose yesterday, and in large part to me, Joe, it was about the defense not making plays in the secondary against two elite players, DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson, which happens in the NFL, and the special teams issue writ large across the board. I don't care as much about the LaShawn Sims play. I just don't. I don't think it was the deciding factor in the game. I don't think it was a top 50 play in the game. But a blocked field goal, a fake punt, the inability to have, Ryan Suckup not out there on the onside kick, which again is also like a less than 10% play anyway. But I think special teams as a whole, Joe, you could ask the question, why has this organization also as a whole, Robinson, Vrabel, and everybody, handled this part of their team the way they've handled it going all the way back to training camp?
Yeah, and the Ryan Suckup thing I think is complicated because you're talking about a guy who from 2014 to 18, 86.6%. He's been terrific. You think about three years ago, Kansas City, it's about negative -1 million there, and how he got that kick over the crossbar in those conditions, I still don't understand, but that obviously set the Titans up. And of course, the Titans then blew it at Jacksonville, but still, that was a big moment. Suckup's been great. This is a guy, you've signed him to a $20 million extension in 2018. It's not easy with a guy like that to say, okay, well, just move on. The thing I have harder time understanding is signing a kickoff specialist, Ryan Santoso, which was done before. He's played the last three games because Suckup was struggling to kick off and get touchbacks, and this guy is 9-for-17 on touchbacks. And if you had a reliable guy that you're paying, you're taking a roster spot for a kickoff specialist. If you had a guy
out of 46 that you're allowed to have active,
if you had a guy who actually like could boom it every time, then at the end of that game yesterday, you could have just sailed it through the end zone and said, "We'll take that last stoppage at the 25 at the 2-minute warning." And then we'll actually get the ball. It's a little
maybe around the 35 or 40 if we're lucky.
So you probably have sure. 2 or 3 passes to try to get to the sideline. And again, then you're trying to set up Suckup, who is 1-for-6. I mean, you can turn around and around in this kicking situation. It's just like, what the heck happened? I think that not sticking with Cody Parkey is an easy one now to look back on and say, man, right. I know it's not like 3-for-3 is some sample size that says, well, this is the guy. But 3-for-3, 9-for-12 on touchbacks, and Suckup obviously was not ready.
Clearly, physically, his leg was not strong enough to come back when they did. Outside of Brett Kern, who you just sort of put aside in the special teams because he's one of the best 2 or 3 punters in on the planet today, if not the best. You put him aside. You've had fakes all season long on both field goals and punts where you go, what are we doing? The decision to bring Suckup back early, the decision... I don't know what else you want John Robinson to do in the preseason. Certainly, you could have brought in more than one guy, I guess. But Cairo Santos was an established kicker in the NFL. He kicked for a few years, and You know, every team is looking for a kicker right now. How many teams have gone through different kickers this year? So I'm not sure that there's just like this long list of like really good kickers just sitting available that they should have gone after. But how they've handled it throughout the court, a blocked kick yesterday, surviving against the Chiefs with a blocked field goal and blocking the Colts blocking the kick against the Colts. You cannot win games depending on blocking field goals. The decision making from both John Robinson and Mike Vrabel across the board all season long just doesn't feel like they've handled that situation correctly. And it did sort of finally come back to bite him, because in theory, if you make the field goal in the first quarter on the first drive, you know, it's 24-24 at the end of the day. So, I special teams, and then, of course, I still think the bigger issue is the inability to make big plays on defense in the second half. That the Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler not being out there hurt that team so significantly yesterday, because Deshaun Watson is great and DeAndre Hopkins is great.
Yes.
And they were great in the fourth quarter.
But again, look, even if the Titans were healthy, and we know they aren't, you know, that might happen, and that it has happened before. Deshaun Watson has carved up this team with the full complement of secondary players before. So that's something that sometimes you tip your hat on, and it's reality. Like, they have a better person than you do in this spot. But the kicking thing, there's so many things, and I think if you go game by game and certain games that they lost that could have been wins, I mean, the Buffalo game, Kyro Santos, who, by the way, you know, beat out Ryan Succop years ago in Kansas City. That's why he was available.
Right.
You know, he's 0 for 4, but he's 0 for 3 in that game. You're down a touchdown. You're at their 35, their 6:35 left in the game, and you sent him out for a 53-yarder to go 0 for
right,
4, and
right.
It wasn't even close.
The field goal.
And then you cut him.
You go for it on 4th and 6 against the Jags when you should have kicked the field goal. You know, like, you go for it against the Falcons when you should have kicked the field goal, and, you know, to cut, make it 3 scores. Again, special teams and 4th down decisions, and the whole thing has been a question, I think, for this organization all season long, going all the way back to camp. And again, like you said, sometimes you have to look at Deshaun Watson and just go, man, the dude's just awesome. Like, he's just I think there's more than a few times yesterday where any other quarterback gets sacked, where Harold Landry beats his guy off the edge, has Deshaun Watson, and just can't catch him because Deshaun Watson's a 4-5 guy. And I just think that Drew Brees, for example, doesn't get away from that sack. So I think there is more pressure on a quarterback other than Deshaun Watson yesterday, and I think that played a role as well. And if you don't get, you know, the miracle, like, again, I call it a miracle when you get a turnover in your own end zone. You got two of them yesterday on defense. The Simmons tip into Jayon Brown's hands when you're about to go down 21-7. You know, that's a huge play, but all that did was counteract the one that you gave them, which was the Firkser bounce into Whitney Mercilus's hands. So
yeah, like, I still,
those sort of counteract each other.
Yeah, like, I could make the case that if it starts out 7-0 and they score, I mean, the Firkser play should have been a touchdown, but if not, maybe he stopped at the one or whatever, even if it's an incomplete pass, they score a touchdown there, that the Titans would end up winning the game. I don't know that for sure, but, you know, that turns into quickly a 14-0 hole. You have to work so hard,
right,
including the Jayon Brown play, to get it back to 14-all. And then at that point, the place was alive. It was like, okay, they've got it back. Here you go. Let's see. This is it. This is a tie game. Let's start over. This is for the division, probably. And the bottom line is the Texans were just better. Their offense was just better than your defense from that point on.
Yeah, and that's how we can make a lot of excuses about a game. There's so many plays in a football game that dictate how it ends. But, you know, all this stuff early, it is what it is. But you were still in a game where it was tied in the second half at 14, and you had a chance to win the game. And you couldn't make play. You could not get off the field. You gave up 140 yards rushing, which is not only 40 yards above your average, but 10 yards above their average. So they ran the ball better. And it wasn't Deshaun Watson rolling around and making a bunch of plays. Carlos Hyde had over 100 yards rushing yesterday.
It was 4 and 5 and 3 and 5. And usually against the Titans, it's 1 and 2 and 3rd and long.
Yep.
And it's a very underrated thing yesterday that kept them out of those 3rd and monster distances and just put you in more conflicts. And, you know, it's just way harder to defend that way.
Those conflicts are what allowed Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins to make plays in the fourth quarter. They were held in check for the first three. But as Carlos Hyde starts chipping away at those linebackers and chipping away at the secondary, and Dean Pease and those guys are thinking about Carlos Hyde more and more every play, what happens is there's just a little bit of extra space for DeAndre Hopkins, and Again, I think he only had two catches for like 20-something yards going into the fourth quarter. I think he had 4 for 98 in the fourth quarter. And he made three or four huge chunk plays where he just beat your guys. It's one thing if Kenny Stills beats Logan Ryan on man-to-man coverage on a crossing route from the other side of the formation to the end zone and Watson makes a perfect throw. Okay. DeAndre Hopkins didn't beat you, I guess. But he did in the fourth quarter, and some of that's because the running game was fairly effective for Houston yesterday. And we talked about that. Derrick Henry did carry the ball over 20 times, but sort of beneath his averages, 4.1 yards a carry, beneath his average, 85 yards beneath his average, and clearly not 100%, but gave you kind of what you needed, which was the threat and to create play action, and that happened as well yesterday. So the offense, it made a couple of mistakes early. It played very well in the second half. Another 20-point second half is positive. A.J. Brown is a freak of nature. Jonnu Smith showed excellent athletic ability like he always does.
He's a freak, too.
That dude needs the ball more. So there's some positives, and this team is still in the race. They are not out of it. The Steelers losing last night to the Bills helps them in that situation. But you got to go win two games here. And 10-6, I think even if you miss the playoffs, 10-6 will feel like it's different because it's Tannehill and because it's not 9-7. So those two things will work. NFL fans, don't miss NFL's best NFL pregame shows. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 7 to 9:30 a.m., followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from the George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. prior to the Titans taking on the New Orleans Saints. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boom Bob's Craft Pizza and Tap House. If there's one thing about this team, though, Joe, that is positive, is that it knows how to bounce back when it faces adversity. They get angry. They're good in this. They're good at halftime. They make adjustments when they've not played well in the first half. They generally come out well in the third quarter. They did that again yesterday. And generally, when they're facing adversity and they lose a game like this, they come back and they play well the next week. I think they're going to play well against the Saints. But you got no other choice at this point. You've got to win games with two to go, and both the Saints and the Texans on the clock. Rough, rough weekend for all Tennessee sports fans. We'll explain when we return right here on Morning Drive. If you miss any of the show, we've moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify or log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio. Rate, review, and subscribe today. Tennessee Volunteers lose to Memphis in really ugly fashion at Thompson Bowling Arena, ending the 31-game winning streak at home, denying Rick Barnes of the 700, and of course, giving Penny Hardaway some bragging rights for a year, which, of course, he loves right now as he continues to call attention to his program, and rightly so, as he should. You got something to add there?
Well, Penny was really good after the game. He really was. And I know the instant reaction from a lot of Tennessee fans was, oh, he's trying to save the series. But you know what? He said he cringed when he looked back at stuff he said last year.
That's pretty good.
He said it was just
perspective.
Yeah, and he had a long talk with Rick Barnes before the game. I thought he was really good to handle it well, and I took him at his word. And I thought he was genuine. And again, a lot of the reaction is just like, oh, yeah, you're trying to save the series. But this whole series thing with them, neither side needs a series. We need it. Let's all say, I'd like to watch this game.
100%. It's great for the state of Tennessee. We'll talk to Dick Vitale coming up in just a few minutes. So we'll talk with Dickie V, who was on the call for that game as well. The Titans lose 24-21 to the Texans on Sunday at Nissan Stadium, and the Predators fall 4-1 to the Dallas Stars, who, of course, have a new coach after firing Jim Montgomery last week in very bizarre fashion. There's not a lot to be taken away from this win, the loss by the Preds. They fall to 14-12-5 on the season. They are now in 12th place in the Western Conference. They are 1 point out of the Chicago Blackhawks for last place in the Central Division. At some point, when you're as bad as you are on the power play and as bad as you are on the penalty kill, the roster is too talented for them to be where they are. And to have a second period like you did on Saturday night, you won the first period, you go up 1-0, you play well in the first period, you come back in the second period and you give up a 4 spot. I know Dallas is a pretty decent team, but they're a 4th place team. And you get routed at home when you know how big this game is and the schedule's gotten a little tougher and you've lost twice now. You're the 12th place team in the West. You are what your record says you are. Right now, this is just not a good hockey team. The problem is I'm saying that too many times this year.
Yeah, it's surprising. You know, I really thought they were in a rut a few weeks ago, and I said, you know what, this happens during the season. This team's way too good. They got on a little run. But now, you know, a performance like this, you just, it's just, there's too much of this. And I think you're seeing it, Braden, a little bit with the fans. I've noticed the atmosphere in that place has been a little bit, I don't know, less fantastic the way that we're used to. I mean, they got booed off the ice.
Have not seen that in a long time.
I can't remember that happening. But honestly, yeah. I don't blame the fans for that. I mean, look, this is a really talented team. These tickets are not inexpensive, and you know, professional sports teams. I mean, that's goes with the territory sometimes. I don't know what's going on with these guys, but clearly they're frustrated.
Well, and listen, there's a lot of things. Cost of tickets. Listen, if you have to pay for a good product, and as your team and your franchise gets better, you have to pay for a good product.
Sure.
They go to the Stanley Cup. They win the President's Trophy. They win another division. I don't. You know, it sucks. It is what it is. But it's market. It's the market working itself out, and that's the free market. That's the society we live in.
But that also gives you the right to voice your displeasure.
I do think, and this is a credit. Hear what I'm saying here. This is a credit to the Predators organization that fans are pissed off right now.
They've raised the expectations.
They have elevated the standard. And when you elevate the standard, that is the goal. And Pecorine never shies away from this. In fact, the first time I was ever working in this market on doing this, covering hockey, was 2016, the fall of 16, the start of the season that ended up being the Stanley Cup run. And I will never forget my first interview covering the Preds. I walked into that locker room and I wanted to go right to Pecorine and introduce myself and do an interview with him. And I said, I asked him about expectations. And I said, and his answer, I'll never forget it. The point of playing the game is to have expectations. That is the point. We are expected to win championships. That is what we expect of ourselves. That is what we expect of our locker room. That's what we expect of each other. And I expect to win championships. And what this organization, the coaching staff and the players have done is elevate the bar so high in a city where maybe the bar was low for 15 years. Not low, but like we just sort of liked having it around and it was fun and we loved going. But it wasn't championship level expectations. It wasn't, you know, like a New York media expectation for the Giants or Alabama football or, you know, whatever. They did this because they worked hard enough and were smart enough and talented enough and good enough to get it to this place, to where now fans are actually pretty pissed off that you're 12th in the West. And that's a good thing. I know it doesn't sound like that, but that's where this franchise has come. And I think that is a positive. The issue is you're 12th place in the West. You got to fix that part of it. And you got the talent to do it.
Yeah, and look, it's a different team this year, but it is a trend of you build up to that, you know, Cup final run, then you win the President's Trophy, get to the second round, and then you're out in the first round, and now you're sitting here talking about, are you going to make the playoffs? And it's still, I mean, 31 games in.
Oh, you got a long,
long way to go. Got games in hand on everybody, by the way, but still, like it, right now, the trend does not feel good. And if you go back to 13-3 start last year, since then, 500 or a little bit less.
Or I mean, Pekka, what was it, Pekka, 8-0-2 to start this year? I mean, they were off to such a ridiculous start this year. And to be where they are now. Obviously a large losing streak in there as well. Real quickly, I do have a positive, though. I heard from a fan on Saturday night, a big Preds fan on Saturday night, and she feels very positive about all this. So we'll get her thoughts on this in just a second. But Bob in Antioch wants to chime in. Bob, what's up?
I have a comment. I forget the analyst's name, but there's a hockey analyst who thinks that the other teams in the league have figured out how to beat Laviolette's system, and was wondering if you guys think that there's much validity to that, that maybe they need to tweak it a little bit. And my other comment is Arvidsson and Forsberg and Johansson and Ellis, they've all been injured multiple times in the last several years. Do you think that those injuries have dimmed their skills a little bit? Just a little bit, but still done that nonetheless. Now listen,
I can't say that because Arvidsson broke the franchise record in goals scored last year. Ellis is on a career pace this year to score. Forsberg is had a couple of slumps this year, but is still the leading scorer, I think tied with Bonino in terms of goal scoring. Could Forsberg give you a 40 goal season? Yes, he should. At some point in his career, he's too good not to. But I don't really think that I think it affected the player maybe post. Like, I think Ellis was a different player when he came back
last year.
Yeah, like I think it took him longer to recover, maybe. But Arvidsson it's hard to argue. You know, Arvidsson had his best goal scoring season ever and was hurt a little bit last year and missed some time. So
yeah, I mean, the only thing is, little guys like that, maybe they're more prone to getting hurt. But
I would assume
Arvidsson, yeah, Arvidsson still. When he's there, he's good.
Yeah, there's no slowing down in his game, and his game doesn't really change. All right, there was a really positive. Dick Vitale going to join us, by the way. And listen, I reached out. I talked to the community. I'm a man of the people. And I did hear from a Predators fan on Saturday that still clearly is not disappointed at all. She's still very fired up about this team.
Go Predators! Go Predators! Go Predators! Go boys! Go Predators on the game!
Who's winning?
I'm the Preds. Hockey player. Go Predators!
That's unbridled optimism.
Go boys!
I like that one.
My 3-year-old daughter still very much on the bandwagon. Still not even close. By the way, that was first period hockey there. They were up 1-0.
Yeah, so. What did she say at the end of the third?
She went to bed. She thinks they
there
won.
There you go. Yeah.
She, as far as she's concerned, they won that game Saturday night.
That's what's great when bedtime is early that you don't know.
Well, it's great because she looks forward to the 5:30 games, like, because it was a little earlier. She loves it because she actually gets – I do the whole day around it. I'm like, I start in the morning, I go, Marin, and I use it as like, if you listen and you pay attention and you behave today, there's some hockey later on if you want to watch the hockey. Doesn't care about football. We'll sit down and watch hockey with me, though.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she loves it. So still very optimistic about the Preds' chances. I asked her after that. I said, what do you think? How much, you know, are you concerned about the power play? And she said, no, it's 51 games to go. she feels very good about where
they're
moving
the puck better.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
She
thinks they need to shoot a little bit more, but it's okay. See, look, still some positivity there. And if you can't find that adorable, I don't want you hanging out with us anymore. Dick Vitale going to join us when we return. He called the game Memphis and Tennessee over the weekend. So we'll talk with the great Dickie V when we come back right here in Morning Drive. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans lose, Preds lose, Vols lose. Tough weekend for the state of Tennessee and fans in Middle Tennessee. Joe Rex wrote in for Derek Mason. My name's Braden Gall. And, of course, joining us here on the show, legendary color analyst for ESPN, Dick Vitale, who was on the call for the Memphis and Tennessee game. Dickie V, thank you so much, Coach, for joining us. We do appreciate it. And I think that the Tennessee Volunteers' backcourt shooting woes on Saturday seemed to be a pretty big issue. Is that something you're concerned about for this team moving forward, or do you think it was a one-time thing?
No, I'm not concerned at all. I mean, they're two veteran guards. He's had a little shoulder problem when you think about Turner, and they didn't shoot the ball well. You got to credit a little bit of the athleticism, the tough defense of Memphis. They come after you, man. They come after you. But bottom line, they had some good looks. They didn't go down, and that's been a story. It was for Arizona the other day against Gonzaga, and that loss they had, and that's the way basketball goes. And the three-point line, you know, is a little deeper now, and you got a little bit more where you got that depth involved, and that affects it a little. So, again, they got a good basketball team. I think the kids inside have really improved. When you look at Fulkerson and Pons, and I think they're going to have a very good year. I think, obviously, their strength is their backcourt, and their strength to not play to their potential against Memphis. But you got to credit Memphis as well. I mean, he started off very slowly. I love their athleticism. Well, that's a big win for them. To get that win without Wiseman and without the kid, Canonis as well, is really, really special.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that, Dick. Hey, this is Joe Rexroad. It's good to hear from you, Dick. And I wanted to ask you about Memphis because – you have to project, of course, with Wiseman coming back, Canonis coming back. And I know that team at times, I thought that offensively, forced to play a slower pace, they struggled with that. But they executed late. What do you think the ceiling is for that Memphis team when they get everybody back and have a few more weeks to kind of grow together and get ready for the NCAA tournament?
Well, I think, Joe, you know, you've been around the game. You were up in Michigan State area for a while, but you know your basketball. But you're right. You know, they struggle a little bit in the half-court sets, trying in a structured environment when people slow them down. But that's to be expected. You got a lot of young kids. They're all coming out of high school. They're all superstars in high school. And now some of them have to adjust to being a third and fourth option. I think anytime you got a kid like Wiseman who joins you, he creates incredible space and angles for players to drive the basketball. I think it's going to help help immensely for kids like Harris and certainly Ellis and company and Jeffries. I think they're going to really benefit big time with his presence on the floor. Chua as well. I think they're going to have more lanes to the glass. People are going to concentrate blocking him out, keeping him away. And you guys are going to go Chua and have Jeffries get on the glass. I think your offensive rebounding is going to improve. I think their driving is going to improve. Shot selection becomes a problem with young kids. They demonstrate a little bit, I thought, you know, some poor shot selection. But I expect that. When I see young kids playing like that and they play, Penny allows them to play. You know, I think one of the big problems in college, I think I mentioned it during the game. I know I mentioned it in one of the games I recently did. But I really think one of the dilemmas we have, I mean, you look at the scores out there. I mean, it just breaks me up. I mean, shot clock and three-point shot and team scores of 38, 45, 50. Come on, give me a break. And I think a lot of it's because coaches overstructure their offensive sets. They want to control the whole tempo, control the kid's ability, and they don't give the kids the freedom. And I think that the one positive when you look at Memphis, Penny Hardaway gives them freedom. He gives them the ability to demonstrate what they've been doing all their lives on the playgrounds, playing out. But it does become a dilemma when you get back into the real crucial game where now you have to have some patience and poise.
Dick Vitale joining us here. DickVitaleOnline.com is the website for all Dickie V merchandise. And again, you were on the call for the Memphis and Tennessee game on Saturday. Memphis goes into Thompson Bowling Arena and gets a win in a great atmosphere. Coach, there's so many teams that have been in the top five this year already. It feels like everybody's losing it on any given week. It doesn't feel like there's maybe a clear-cut dominant team like we've seen in past years. I always find that that's a positive. I get more excited about the tournament when I don't really know what to expect from teams. Do you think it's good for college basketball that we're seeing so much parity at the top?
You know, I think it's exciting. There's no doubt about it. I happen to be the other way. I like to see that dominant team and people chasing that dominant team, trying to catch them, trying to be able to put an end to their dominance. And the one beauty about college basketball, because it's a one game, bad game, and a party's over, we've seen many outstanding teams not able to survive, not able to make it. And I think that has been fun. I mean, you take a look at Kentucky. They've had dominant players, dominant teams, but because it's not 4 out of 7, they've been beating one national title during the era of John Calipari. Why? Because of the system, because of what our game is about. And it's a situation where it's one bad night and the party's over. It's not a 4 out of 7 scenario. And that really, I think, adds to the beauty of what college basketball is about.
Well, Dick, this year, interesting to me, I know in a lot of years we see parity and, you know, you think it looks wide open out there, but a lot of years we also will have, you know, one or two teams that look dominant. I look around right now, and I can't see the dominant team. And maybe someone will emerge. Maybe Gonzaga is that team. That was a really good win in Arizona. I do like what Kansas has with Azubuike inside. But do you think this is more of a wide-open year? And right now, if you had to pick someone to win this thing, who would your choice be?
Well, you know, I think right now it's so difficult to say who you think's gonna cut the nets down because it's been one that is so up and down. I got Kansas coming up in about a week or so on the road against Stanford. Looking forward to seeing them in person. Saw them earlier this year when they got beaten by Duke. But, you know, they got a great inside-outside action there when you think about Azubuike and you think about Dotson. So they're a good basketball team. I don't know. I don't think they're dominant. I really don't. I think it's going to add to so much to the game. Coming down to March Madness, it's going to be really a wild scene. And I really think that the one thing that excites me is to see who's going to come forward. You know, injuries can play a big part in it as well. Injuries are going to play a big part, so there's no question that can be a factor. And I just got a guest coming in my house. I was sorry, I hesitated right here. Seth Davis, you know, from The Athletic, just walked in the house. But again, I think the one thing about the game is that we're going to have so much parity out there. I mean, just take a look, for example, what happened in the Big Ten. Let's look at the Big Ten. Just this week alone, you had three teams that were heavily, heavily rated, way up on top, all got beat. Illinois beats Michigan. Penn State beats Maryland. Ohio State gets beat by Minnesota. I think the bottom line is that's exciting. Look at Rutgers. They blow out Seattle. I know Powell got hurt, but they blew him out. So I think the Big Ten is going to be a rocky road for teams. There'll be a lot of teams get some losses along the way. Michigan State, we all thought Michigan State was going to be so dominant. And I know they lost to Ken Langford before the season, but the bottom line is they haven't played anywhere near to where people thought they would play and where they would be. But they're dangerous. Tom Izzo, as you know, Joe, he has a way of getting teams to regroup and to make that charge. But Michigan started off, looked unbeatable out there in the Bahamas. I did those games. Then all of a sudden, they've lost three games out of four. Now, they lost to quality teams and quality real performances, too. I mean, they lost the heartbreaker to Oregon at home, though. If you're nationally ready, you got to win that game at home. They lost on the road to Illinois, and then they got beat by Illinois, Oregon. I'm thinking one other they got beat by. I can't think of the third one. But they lost three games, I know, along the way right now. So, again, it's wild. It's really wild in college hoops.
Dick Vitale joining us here on the call for the Memphis-Tennessee game on Saturday. You got a new book coming out that will benefit the V Foundation. I know you do a ton of work for the V Foundation, obviously, Coach, something that's near and dear to your heart. So we'll get to that in a second. I just wanted to get your thoughts in general, though. You go to all these basketball arenas around the country. They're meccas of places that celebrate this great sport. You know, just describe in your words what you felt being at Thompson Bowling Arena for a Memphis-Tennessee game where the fans were so crazy. And sort of, I know it's not ever going to be Cameron Indoor or Fog Allen, but just sort of describe the vibe at Thompson Bowling on Saturday.
Well, it's tough to be Cameron Indoor and tough to be Fog because the students are right on top of you. But certainly it was an environment that was very electric. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they started the minute I went in there and I had a great time with all the students before the game and they were really fired up big time. But, you know, Memphis quieted the crowd down too when they went at that run they did and that quiets the crowd down. Then the crowd got live again and unfortunately Pons missed a free throw at the end of 1-on-1. Could have tied the game if he made both. But, you know, it was a great environment. I mean, they've done a tremendous job, Rick Barnes and his staff, since coming to Tennessee. I really believe that when you got 21,000 fans sold out, the place was just used to hold 24,000, which I thought was too big, you know, so difficult. Last year, I think they rated, they rated fourth in the nation in attendance, 19,000. Number one was Syracuse, and two was Kentucky, and three was Carolina. But again, 19,000 fans as an average is pretty good interest. It was a great environment. Orange Nation was rocking and rolling. They were ready to play. But you got to credit the Memphis kids. We're talking about kids out of high school playing without their superstar. We're not talking another player. We're talking a player that people are projecting right now. Everyone will be the first player taken in the NBA draft. I asked Penny before the game. I said, Penny, you played in the NBA. How good is this kid? Is he ready to make an impact? You think right away? He said, without a doubt, he will be an impact player in the NBA immediately. Now, I was also shocked to learn that Penny Hardaway's not in the Hall of Fame. I was really surprised about that because the new young guys like him are in the Hall of Fame. Grant Hill, Tracy McGrady, and he was right up there. I mean, those guys deserve to be in. Grant and certainly Tracy, but I think Penny does as well.
Dick, tell everybody about the website, what they can find on the website, and, of course, all the proceeds for your books going to help the V Foundation.
Yeah, I got to wrap this up. I got my man here is going to interview me, so I got to wrap it up. And said, David, you know, he's big time. He's laughing right now. I should let you guys say hello, get him on the air. But the bottom line is really, I want to thank you for mentioning my website about the V Foundation. Everything I'm doing now, I mean, I'm 80 years old, man, and I act about 12, and I hope to stay that way all my life. And I got a lot more years. So I hope to be there. I told Dan Schumann, he's not laughing. I said, Dan, I hope you're going to be here because I plan on being here when I'm 100 years old, sitting at courtside saying, he's awesome, baby. Be the first broadcaster in the history of broadcasting to sit there. Why not? If you can't dream big, right? I think I tell young people, I do a lot of motivational speaking. I've been with the Washington Speakers Bureau for the last 30 years. They send me all over this country. And I tell young people, if you don't have dreams and goals and you don't have that desire, that passion, what is there to live for? I mean, you got to have passion pain and pride. I wake up today, I have some goals I want to achieve today. I have some goals I want to accomplish, things I want to get done. And I think you have to have that in life. And the one thing I'm really, you know, obsessed with right now, I mean obsessed, is raising money for kids battling cancer. You know, these kids that come to my gala, I don't see them for the first time at my gala. I get to know these kids. And when you get to know them and know what their families go through, it's like today, as I tell people all the time. I gave a speech the other day at the Garden about when we did Jimmy V Day, all about, you know, cancer and what kids go through. Today, just think about what I'm going to say to you today. We're talking about basketball. Some coach is down right now, right? He got beat. Oh, wow, it's the end of the world. Oh, really? You know that today, 45 to 50 mothers and fathers are going home today with the holidays looking at them and hearing four words that no mom and dad ever, ever wants to hear. Your child has cancer. Think about it. It's life-changing. I all got involved with a fellow neighbor of mine, Patrick Wright. Patrick tells me till this day, he will never forget the pain and the hurt. He was living the American dream. Three beautiful girls, beautiful home, nice job, standing there in the doctor's office and hearing the doctor tell them, you know, your little girl, they were at SeaWorld, and she was screaming and yelling, Peyton. She was screaming and yelling about pain in her knee. Couldn't take it. Want to go home. They said, Peyton, we're here having a great time. No, I got to go home. It's killing me. So they go home. They hear through the doctor. The doctor looks at the knee and says, nothing wrong other than growing pains. 5 years old. They go home. This is how I got started. You want to know how I got started? This is how I got started being so obsessed about it. She started banging the walls, screaming about her pain. They said, we just went to the doctor. You're okay. They went back again. They did an MRI. Doctor said, let's do an MRI on the whole body. He said, when the doctor walked in and told he and his wife, Holly, he said, Holly, Patrick, I got the worst news in the world. She's screaming, has nothing to do with her knee. She has a tumor the size of a grapefruit, and it's right on her spine, and it's going to metastasize. My wife and I watched that little girl. We watched that little girl where I go to a place called Another Broken Egg for breakfast. They would come down there. I watched her sit in a wheelchair paralyzed. I watched her become blind, and then we watched her pass. And we went to that funeral. When the funeral ended, I could feel the moment right now. When it ended, I ran to the car where they were sitting. After the funeral and watching a mom and dad put their child to rest, the tears your heart out, I ran. I said, hey, we're going to do something. I'm going to get my buddies to raise $1 million in her name. We're going to do it in 6 months, and we're going to have research grants to help other kids battling what she passed from. And we did it, and we've been doing it for 14 years since she passed. And I will tell you this, I'm so proud of my team. They're here right now. I'm on my team members, Rebecca, who I'm looking at right now in my office, doing a bunch of books they're mailing out. I don't make 5 cents. Everything I do now, everything, every dollar I make from my books, my hats, my balls, goes to that fund. And this year my goal is $5 million. Last year we did 4.3. So I need your help out there. Please tell people to go to DickVitaleOnline.com. They can get my latest book, my Mount Rushmores, the best coaches, best players, in my opinion. Doesn't make me right, in my opinion, in my 40 years at ESPN. And then they can buy hats and basketballs, great holiday gifts. I will autograph them all. They sent them. That's what they're doing here. I sat them yesterday. I autographed all kinds of orders that came in. And I'll do anything to raise money for kids because it's brutal. About 3 months ago, I'll close with this. 3 months ago, it broke my heart. A youngster by the name of Jake Taraski, you don't know Jake. Jake and I became great friends. Jake was a member of my all-courageous team. At age 2, he was told he wouldn't walk, he wouldn't talk, and basically probably would not make it to 5 years old, as mom and dad were told. Jake played college baseball last year. Jake had neuroblastoma. Jake is as beautiful a young guy as you'll ever meet. Helped to get him a job as an intern up at the Tampa Bay Bucks. I'd do anything for that kid. He's a beautiful young guy. The bottom line is he called me and he says, Mr. V, there's a youngster has the same thing that I had, neuroblastoma, 3 years old. He said, can I bring him down to meet you and all that? And I said, sure. So he brought him down to Broken Egg. We met, gave him a basketball. The kid was, parents were happy. The cancer was in remission. Oh, they were so thrilled. He calls me back a couple months later and he says, oh, my God, I got bad news. He said, Clayton didn't make it. he passed. It came back and spread all over, and he died. Well, I spoke at his service, and I'll tell you, there's nothing worse, man. Watching a mother and father put a kid to rest, are you kidding me? That's as bad as it gets. So again, anybody could help me, because you know what really upsets me? That really upsets me. I'm going to tell you this right now. And my guy Seth can hear this too. He's here. But what really upsets me, if I said this at my gala last year. At my gala, we have, you name them, they're there. I mean, we've had Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney's, Brian Kelly's. We've had Calipari's, you know, you name them, Patino's, Donovan's, Tom Izzo, Tony Dungy. They've all been there. All been there. And I told the crowd was filled with guys like Urban Meyer, Jim Harbaugh. And I said, you know, you guys out there, I'm going to tell you this right now to the crowd, 900 places sold out. I said, if Ohio State or Alabama or Clemson or Notre Dame wanted to call a meeting and say, you know what, we got to get new football facilities, man. We need better locker rooms than they got down at LSU or Tennessee. We get that done, man, they raise $65 million, $70 million with the alumni donating like nothing. Yet I got to beg. People tell me, oh, Dick, you're doing a great job. No, I'm not doing a great job. If I was doing a great job, these kids, I wouldn't be speaking at funerals. And I'll tell you this, you get me fired up. When I get the airways on this stuff, I like to get going because it's so true that I got to beg and plead for $5 million. I'd sign books. I got to go places and just constantly, constantly sell. That's a crime. We're talking about lives, man. We're talking about kids, flesh and blood. It should be easy. There's a lot of money in our nation. A lot of money. I don't expect people that don't have money. Please understand that. There are a lot of people out there struggling. I'm talking people that have been successful, that are on top of the world. It seems to be on a back burner. I mean, we got kids dying like crazy. It's crazy. And that just frustrates me. I got to wrap up, man. But I'll tell you this. I thank you guys. Someone, Joe, Braden, I thank you guys. Really good. I mean, for a great ride there in the state of Tennessee, both with Memphis and Tennessee, you're going to have a lot to cheer about. But I hope, I'll close with this. I hope they extend that rivalry. Just like Indiana, Kentucky, said it 5 million times, should be playing. That should be an annual game. No ifs, but what's about it? Instead of playing all these cupcakes, games that mean nothing, you know, players want those games, alumni want those games, fans want those games, the media wants those games, but the coaches' egos get involved, and for selfish reasons, they don't make it happen. And I know I've said this on TV, it's time Calipari and Archie get this thing done and get them to play. And I hope Penny and Rick Barnes, I saw that Rick might think of ending this, I hope he changes his mind, because that would be just a great game to have. I saw the excitement there on Saturday. Memphis and Tennessee should play.
Dick, you're doing God's work. DickVitaleOnline.com. Thank you so much.
Well, you got me so fired up today about that. I really, like I said, you mentioned kids to me. I love kids. I love young people. I think that's what keeps me young. Anyway, I got to get a T.O., baby. I got to run. Hey, thanks a lot. Have a great, great holiday.
You're the best,
you
Dick.
You too, Coach. Thank you, Dick. I don't think we need to add anything to that.
Drop the mic.
Stick to sports when we come back.
The world is a crazy place.
Crazy sounding pretty good right now.
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw it in the trash.
And stick to sports. Now, on Morning Drive.
Stick to Sports is brought to you by Decorating Den Interior. Stick with the pros at Decorating Den when you're ready to decorate your home, office, or outdoor spaces. Request a complimentary appointment at decoratingden.com. That appointment today will be all of like 30 seconds because Dick Vitale had a lot to say. You do not interrupt Dick Vitale when he's talking.
That was
spectacular.
That was awesome.
I mean, there's so much there, and I don't know how you take a transition from children who are sick to yelling at Archie Griffin and John Calipari to play a series. Only Dick Vitale can do that. Only Dick Vitale can do that. We do have a contest today, a Moments Piece Salon and Day Spa $100 gift card on our Twitter contest. That's at 1025_MD. So instead of doing some topics here during Stick to Sports, Marquise, sorry, dude, you get bumped for Dick Vitale, dude. I'm sorry.
I mean, I don't care. Yeah. I'm the one that got the guy, so hey,
sorry.
It's all good.
Good work, Marquise. Excellent job getting Dick Vitale.
Thank you. He didn't thank me in the whole, you know, spiel. I was going to save that and, you know, play it on a loop when I go on dates. Like, yeah, that's Dick Vitale. Saying my, you hear that?
Like, you joke about that, but Stillman actually would do that.
Oh.
Ooh, that's rough.
Well, okay. No, it'd be Jordan Rodgers.
Good friends of mine. Good friends. All right. So,
That's low-key good right there,
all
man.
All right, so let's talk about this. Office Christmas parties. Now, the worst experience you had at an office Christmas party. Let's go to Shane. Shane says, I was at an office Christmas party 10 years ago. I was wearing khakis when someone spilled 22-ounce beer on my lap.
That's a big beer.
Yeah, it's a big beer. I tried to clean it up the best way I could, but to no available. So I walked around the bowling alley for 3 or 4 hours looking like I peed my pants.
It's pretty bad.
That's one, but they get better.
It's one thing if it's you and you spill it on yourself, you can kind of laugh at yourself. But when someone else does it, it just makes you angry.
It does.
Yeah.
It's like stepping on my sneakers.
Yeah, don't smudge my Puma, dog.
Exactly. Kayla Payne wrote, the worst Christmas party experience I've ever had was when I realized that someone was at the party that in the past I had arrested, I guess. And then I had to talk to this person and their family, and then lost my Christmas gift because that person also had my name for Dirty Santa.
What are the odds of being a police officer, arresting someone, and then that some person being at your Christmas party and they having you as the Dirty Santa? Like, what are the odds of that taking place? It's got to be astronomically low.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty bad. Karma. That's pretty bad.
It does. This one, I think.
Depends on what the guy did.
I'd like to know more about this.
I think Caleb seems like a fine, upstanding police officer. So.
Absolutely. Now, this one may take the cake. This is the leader of the board right here. Yeah. Trout Creek. I don't know if this is a business or not. Hopefully it's not. But I met a woman at the bar that I did not recognize. We started making out. I then felt a tap on my shoulder. I turn around, and my boss was looking at me. He said, oh, I see you met my ex-wife. And then I turned back and looked at her. She smiled at me with a black front tooth. That's,
I'm not sure what the tooth has to do with anything.
I don't know.
The lead on this is you go to an office Christmas party. You meet someone, you hit it off, and listen, if you want to suck a little face at the bar, then fine, have fun, make out. But if it's your boss's ex-wife, I don't know what you say to that.
Did they talk? Like, did they just start making out? This sounds like a pretty wild Christmas party.
It does. He doesn't give details on how long it took him to get to that point, but he got to the point.
I'm assuming it's not, hey, my name's Joe, and then you start slobbering on each other. I'm pretty sure that's not what happened.
It took some conversation, I'm sure.
Maybe that's why she's no conversation
about the boss.
Maybe that's why she's the ex-wife.
Man, so I think that one's the leader.
I think that was the leader in the clubhouse for me as well. That almost sounds fictional.
Because of the tooth thing at the end, you think that's too much?
Just the odds of you being at a bar at your Christmas party and not knowing that you're making out with your boss's ex-wife.
Well, that's the
thing.
Seems
like an odd thing not to know.
Like, you would think there'd be conversation to lead into making out, so then you would think that would somehow come up.
Hey, are you married? Like, what are you here for? Like, clearly, if it's an office Christmas party, they're there for a reason. So you got to ask this person, hey, why are you here? I've never seen you
work at XYZ company, and you don't think the ex-wife would be like, oh, my ex-husband is the boss of that company
I'm starting to have questions about
this. Your teeth, like,
what do you think about the Titans loss last night?
Do you know Jared Stillman?
Darren McFarlane, when we come back, talk a little Preds and Titans with Darren right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.